Part 3 of 3, A Journey Through the Steps with Carver B. from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, at the Birmingham Grace Fellowship of SAA Fall Retreat, October 11, 2014.
Down, this is what you guys came up with as the words to describe the recovered life. This was your description, the group conscience description of the recovered life, or the destination that we're going to take in recovery. Here's what you said. You said the recovered life is going to be serene. It's going to be sane. It's going to be peaceful. It's going to be free. It's going to be joyous and present. You said that it was going to be intimate. It was going to have integrity. And it was going to be humble. How about that? This is where we're going. This is the destination. Hey, I was talking with some of you during the lunch break, and we were talking about the importance of sponsorship and sharing, and I wanted to share with you a story that happened to me. So here we are, and we've just gone through. I've just gotten out of treatment. I'm 2 weeks. I'm a veteran of 2 weeks in the rooms of recovery. But it's a solid 2 weeks. I got a solid couple of bucks in my pocket. And so I go through the inventory, and my sponsor and I, after I had shared my inventory and he gave me that forgiveness piece, did that mean something to you guys? Yeah, I got that forgiveness piece, and then we met the next day and we did step 6 and 7 and 8, and we started on the amends process, which is what we're getting ready to start doing now. But he told me some things that were really important. He said, after I'd done my inventory and I'd started on the amends, he said, now we're going to pray you up a newcomer. Think about that. He tells me, now we're going to pray me up a newcomer. And I must have looked at him with a kind of a shocked expression on my face, because he said, well, because everybody needs a newcomer. You can't hang on to this without a newcomer. He says, you're going to need to start sharing what's happened to you thus far. And I said, but Brian, I said, I got a whopping like 6 weeks sober under my belt. I said, I got nothing to share to a newcomer. And he said, oh, no, no. You have that 100% wrong. He says the newcomer coming in trying to pick up a day or a week wants to know so much more on how to get 6 weeks than he does how to get 17 years, which is what my sponsor had at the time. He said, 17 years to a newcomer, what are they, from the planet Soba? You know, like 17 years. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, go get you a cup of coffee. Sit over there, Mr. 17 years. But you, how did you get 6 weeks? See the identification? Newcomer wants to know eminently more about how to get 6 weeks than they have any concept of 17 years. So don't let the disease, he told me, talk you out of praying up and being of service to a newcomer. And I said, well, how am I going to meet these newcomers? He says, oh, well, now that's the easiest thing of all. He said, here's what I want you to do. As you're going to the meetings, and we're going to a lot of meetings, he says, when you see somebody you don't know, I want you to walk up to them, introduce yourself, and tell them, hey, I'm Carver. I've been around 6 weeks. How much time have you got? Are you new to this group, or you know what? He says, you meet everybody and you introduce yourself to everybody you don't know. He said, and at the end of the meeting, when they give out chips, he said, if somebody's got a chip with less time than you, I want you to go up to them. I want you to thank them for being there. I want you to give them your phone number, offer to be of assistance to them. I want you to welcome every newcomer who's picking up a chip. And if the person getting the chip has got more time than you, I want you to go up to them and I want you to ask them, how did you do it? He says, if you'll do that within the next month or so, you're going to know everybody. You're going to know the old timers, the newcomers. You'll be introducing yourself to people. And I want to tell you that absolutely worked. You know how awkward it feels to start going to meetings. You feel kind of like an outsider. You're not really sure what they're talking about. You know, you kind of feel like an alien visitor in some way or other. This activity, I promise you, will normalize the experience and make you a part of the group in a way that you can't imagine. It works. It really does. Now, that's my personal story. That's not in the big book. So it's borderline heresy. But it is what happened to me. Well, I'm so grateful that you guys are back. And, you know, we've done our inventory. We shared our inventory. And all of you that shared your inventory, give you a big hand because you just did the fifth step. I'm just kind of curious, how many of you, this is the first time you've ever done a fifth step? Raise your hand real high. Don't be ashamed. Let's give those guys a big hand. You've never done a fifth step. Does it get any better than this? You know, does it? Ain't no way. All right. So we've done, we've done our fifth step, and now I'm just kind of going back to the steps. And so it's time to do the sixth step. And the sixth step says this. It says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Before doing an inventory, we might not have known exactly what the character defects were, right? We might have had a guess. We might have been wrong. Who in this room found out something they didn't know about either their character defects or their character assets? Raise a hand. Look at this. Look around. Almost every one of us. Every time I do it, I learn something new about me. And so it's a powerful piece of business. Now you're really prepared to take steps 6 and 7 because you really know what you're going to surrender. And before, it was just a guess. So step 6, we're going to be entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. I remember asking my sponsor, I said, you know, I don't think I really understand why there's a sixth step. I mean, now that I've discovered all this stuff about me, why wouldn't I want to let go of it? And my sponsor says, yeah, but the 12 and 12 of AA says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step, he explained to me, that says, are you finally ready to change? That kind of put it into a new light, if you know what I mean. So let's look and see what the big book says. If you will turn with me after we've shared our inventories, and we're going to turn over to page 76. Thank you. Page 76. And if you'll look on page 76, about 3 lines down from the top of the page, this is what it says about taking step 6.
Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one?
And so, for those of you who are ready to take the sixth step, I'm going to offer you the sixth step question, and all that's required is for you to answer out loud with a yes or a no. Are you guys at a place where you're ready to let God remove from you all the things that you have discovered are objectionable? What is your answer?
Yes!
Everybody that said yes just took the sixth step, and nothing more is required. Give yourselves a big hand. The seventh step says we're going to humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And I tell you, the seventh step is just immediately following. If you'll find the second paragraph on page 76, it says, when ready, we say something like this. And following that is what's known as the seventh step prayer. And so in the steps, we've outlined the terms of surrender. We're going to surrender our will and our lives. And now we're going to, you know, and that seems like a pretty complex thing to me. Will and lives. What does that mean? You know what it means? Thoughts and actions. I'm going to surrender what I think, and I'm going to surrender what I do, and I'm going to do the best I can. And so, in order to surrender, we say a prayer. We say it together. It starts, "My Creator, if you would like to take the seventh step with me today, the same way I did with my sponsor, say this with me out loud. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I draw near to do your bidding. Amen." What does it say next? Give yourselves a big hand. You just completed step seven. Now, here's the interesting thing about the steps. So now we get to step eight, which says we're going to make a list of people we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them. But you know what? Yeah, hadn't we actually already done that? Aren't the people that were willing to make amends, aren't those the names on our inventory with the check marks? You know, it really is. At this point, we've kind of been tricked because we've actually already done our eight-step amends list. That's why we hang on to our inventories, because our inventories have, they reveal to us, our eight-step amends list, or ninth-step amends list, rather. So the big book confirms that in the very next line. You see where it says, "Now we need more action"? Tao, would you read that for us, please, sir?
"Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory."
And that's all the book says about step 8. It's just that one little section. You've got your list already. You made it when you took inventory. And now the book moves right into doing the ninth step amends. How about that? Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. And the book's going to tell us if we haven't the will to do it, then we're going to ask until it comes. So there's some, and I've even seen this organized in several different ways. I had another friend of mine in the program, and he does a really great thing. He has a sponsee with a lot of amends to make. We'll have them divided into two lists, and the list would be willing and unwilling, proximity and no proximity. So of those four sections, the ones that we work on first are those that I'm willing and I have proximity. The next would be those I'm willing and I don't have proximity, so we'd be praying about those. Those that I'm unwilling, that's my prayer list. I'm just going to pray about those, and I'm going to ask to be willing, and I'm just going to ask until it comes. You know, one thing, when you get to the ninth step, I want you to pay attention to the tone and the pace of the steps. Up until now, the big book language, have you noticed how it's bing, bing, bing? These are the words out of the big book. Next, at once, we waste no time. That's quick. But once we hit the ninth step, and into the 10th step, the big book starts going, this is not an overnight matter. We should, you know, continue this for a lifetime. The pace and the tone of the steps starts to slow down. And so there's going to be some that without proximity, there's going to be some amends that may sit out there for a while. But it doesn't stop us from knocking off the ones that we can get to quick, right? And the other thing we're going to learn as we look at the passages, we do the ninth step in God's time. Many of us want the recovered life. I want it now. I don't want to wait. But sometimes I rush ahead of sensibilities. There's one caveat I would ask you to write down as we're about to explore the ninth step. And that's this. It was my sponsor gave me this one. It was almost like a fakwa, which sounded serious. He says, never make an amend without talking it over with somebody first. Think about it. Never run off to make an amend without discussing it with somebody first. And so that has been a practice that I've held true today. And I can't say that I did that. I wanted to get better. I wanted to run ahead. And any time that I ran ahead of sensibility, I made mistakes. And in some cases, mistakes that I needed to go back and do another amend over. I had to amend the amend. It's like compound interest. All right, so let's see what the book has to say. Do you see where it says, now we go out to our fellows? It's right in the middle of that. It's a sentence away from where we left off. Tal, you see it?
I got it.
All right, buddy.
Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol or addiction.
Yeah. And, you know, I tell you, talking about that, about the pace of this, you know, I was working in the family business when God got me sober. And it was a business that was founded by alcoholics and run by alcoholics and addicts. In fact, you couldn't get a job there unless you were an alcoholic or an addict. We were in the hospitality industry, and we were frickin' hospitable. You know what I'm saying? And so, and the only person in the company under any authority that was not an addict was the comptroller. Because we weren't stupid. So, I had, as you can imagine, I had several amends to make to people in active addiction. Imagine how well that went. And it would have been real tempting for me to go to somebody from a place of platitude, right? A place of authority, a place I've been there and you not. It would have been easy for me to go up to one of these people in the office and say, you know, yeah, I'm an addict. Of course, you are too. I'm getting better. Prospects for you seem rather dim. But I'm here to make amends for my part. Unlikely that'll happen on your part. And so I will no longer damage you, and we'll be good, right? Good luck. Thanks for sharing. See you later. Good luck. Goodbye. You see, and so to take it, and the big book talks about people like me. If you look on page 77, four lines down from the top of the page, it describes me beautifully. Do you see the words seldom wise? Tal, what does it say?
It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Yeah. And then, of course, we're going to have to do amends. You know, sometimes it's going to be people we like. Sometimes we're going to need to make amends to people we don't like. And the big book discusses both circumstances. In the next paragraph, if you'll go down about eight lines or so, do you see where it says, nevertheless? You see that part? Start highlighting there, Mr. Tal.
Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
You know, there's it also discusses financial amends that we got to make in the big book. And one of my favorite stories about this, in fact, it's funny, I talked to the guy on the way up here, and I was reminded of the story, and I just wanted to tell it one more time. I was in the early days. I was really active mostly in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I had a fella that one of my first sponsees, and his Computer Jim, and Computer Jim was just doing great, and we really quickly ran him through the first three steps the way my sponsor had done me. And then we got to the part of doing the inventory. And doing the inventory, it was revealed that he had not filed a tax return in several years. Ruh-roh. And this is a problem. He worked for himself so that he couldn't be fired, and had set up a computer company consulting thing. And so he just, you know, he just had stopped, you know, filing taxes and all. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, my friend, we're going to need to look at this. You know, when we got to take care of this. And he would say, yeah, yeah, we're going to look at that. And I kept reminding him, yeah, we're going to look at that. And I'm saying, what about that? Oh, yeah, I'm going to be looking at that. Well, finally, I'm getting frustrated. And I go to my sponsor and I say, you know, this guy's got this problem out there and he isn't looking at it. What do I do? My sponsor said, well, this is pretty simple. He's not in enough pain yet. When he's in enough pain, he'll take a look at it. You just love him. Stay connected to him. Y'all keep doing what you're doing. Pray him up a newcomer. You know, and when he's in enough pain, he'll look at it. I went, okay. So I stopped mentioning it. A year goes by. I don't mention it. 2 years goes by. I don't mention it. He stays sober. I stay sober. All of a sudden, after 2 years, he comes to me and he says, you know, I've been really thinking about that tax stuff, and maybe I ought to take a look at that. And I said, that's brilliant. He says, I've started making some piles, and I've got like my, you know, my 1999 pile, and I got my 2000 pile, and I'm starting to put stuff in piles, and I've talked to a professional. And anyway, as all goes on, he comes back to me and he says, you know, hey, I finally have made contact with the IRS, and we're starting to do some negotiating and everything, and whoo, you know, it's really something. And he says, but the people have been really pretty nice to me about it. And so finally, he's going down to do his last meeting with the IRS, and he's going to sign the papers. So I'm, you know, say, well, let's pray about that. And so he's going down, and I got a phone call from him after he was scheduled to have this meeting, and he says, you are not going to believe what happened. He says, I was sitting there with the lady, and I'm about to sign my papers and all and agree to make the payments, and I something came over me. And I told the lady, he says, you know, I just wanted you to know, and I don't know why, but I just need to tell you that I haven't been really trying to cheat you. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. And I just hadn't been able to pay my taxes. I just didn't do it. And then now, you know, God got me sober a couple of years ago, and I just hadn't had the courage to look at it. But finally now, I've got the courage up, and I'm here to pay exactly what I owe, and I'm so grateful to you for having worked out this deal for me so that I can pay in installments. And I just felt like I needed to tell you that. He said, the lady put down the pen, looked up at him, and said, did you go to treatment? He said, yeah. She said, did you pay with a credit card? He said, yeah. She said, we have dispensations for alcoholics. We're not signing these papers. You need to go back, go get the receipts from that. You get your credit card statement, you bring it back because we can make adjustments in this return we're about to sign. She said, did you go to bars? Did you pay with a credit card? He went, yeah. She said, you need to go back and gather up all those credit card statements and highlight the ones and bring them to me. We can make adjustments in your return. She said, did you go to liquor stores?
Yeah.
Did you pay with a
credit card?
He said, yes. She said, you need to go back and get all your liquor store receipts, all your credit card statements, because we have dispensations for alcoholics and addicts. She said, she pushed the paperwork back to him, he said, and she says, we're not signing nothing today. We're going to be adjusting all this down. By the time he's told me this, I've pulled off the side of the road because I'm afraid I'm going to crash. And I'm like going, we don't know what we're doing. When we enter the world of the Spirit, we got no idea what's going to actually happen to us if we'll just have the courage to go face this stuff and make the amends where appropriate in the best way we can. The other thing I thought was, I wonder what meeting she goes to. See what I'm saying? So the big book talks about all of us addicts. And it talks about that on page 78 in the second full paragraph. And it begins with one of the great understatements of the big book.
Most alcoholics owe money.
Gee, you think? These people are geniuses.
We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking, although we are careful about disclosing behavior issues.
I love that. That's right.
They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism or distorted thinking on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking, or sick thinking, made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink or relapse if we are afraid to face them.
And then, as we talked about earlier, there's a particular spiritual timing to do the amends. And, you know, we wait for the right time. We wait. I mean, we boldly move forward with the guidance of a sponsor, and yet we want to do this stuff in God's time. We don't want to run too far ahead of sensibilities. And the big book talks about that on page 79 in the second full paragraph. You see where it says usually? Highlight right there.
Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic or addicted pit.
And then the big book is real clear about talking about how before we go make an amend, we need to be prayed up, we need to be meetinged up, we need to be sponsored up, we need to have all these things in place prior to taking action. It talks about that in the very first line on page 80.
Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, asked God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink.
And then the big book talks about different types of amends. It talks about, you know, there's some people in our life that we owe an amends to that are no longer in our lives. And the big book is really, you know, in the case for me, you know, I owed an amends to my dad, but my dad had died of addiction, the disease of addiction, about 6 years before I got sober. So how am I going to be able to go out and make an amends to my dad? Well, the big book was really clear on how to handle it. Look on page 83. It's the third paragraph where it begins, "There may be some wrongs."
There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter.
It was pointed out in the case of my dad, there was no need to put postage on it, you know, or a return address. But I have to tell you something. It was immensely helpful to me to write it completely out, put it in an envelope with his name on it, and drop it in the box. I make up that it went to the place that it really needed to go, and that was right here.
I read the letter to my father in his church.
Yeah, and you read it in church?
I read it in church.
Yeah, I've heard so many different ways to do this. I've seen, you know, some that go to a gravesite and do it, some that will burn one, you know, along with other sort of things that are hanging on to. This is what I've learned about this. There's as many ways as there are to have, you know, resentments and fears and things and character defects we need to let go of, there's just as many ways to be able to let go and move forward. There is a way to do every single amends that needs to be done. There is a way to do it. Yeah. And then the ninth step is summarized by the ninth step promises. This is on page 83, starting at the very last paragraph, some of our favorite parts of the big book.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose self-interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves.
Yeah. Then, and my experience is every one of those come true. The last one for me was the fear of people and of economic insecurity was the last that went. You know, those of us might have some here, and I was real skeptical about doing this, and it seemed like, boy, some of them seemed like they were going to be really difficult to do. And if you're like that, well, you're just like one of the co-founders of AA. The story goes in AA history that during the summer of 1935, when Bill and Dr. Bob met almost by accident in Ardmore Street in Akron, Ohio, that when Bob got sober, Bill was there, and he was there on a business trip that was going poorly, and so Bob and Ann invited Bill to move into their house. So for the summer of 1935, Bill Wilson, one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, lived in Dr. Bob's home on Ardmore Street. And so Bill was taking Bob through the four spiritual activities that they later expanded into the 12 steps. And when Bill got to the notion of amends and presented this to Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob says, "I ain't doing it." He says, "You don't understand. I grew up in this town. I am a surgeon in this town. I'm not about to go around to people and tell them that I've harmed them and what I've done. If I do, nobody will refer clients to me. My business will dry up. Buddy, you just don't understand." Well, like any good sponsor, Bill told Dr. Bob, "Why don't you pray about it?" You know, when we don't know what to say, what do we say? "When we pray, let's pray about it," right? And so he says, "Why don't we pray about it and let's see how it goes?" Well, Dr. Bob, several weeks later, got one of those wonderful, great, early sobriety addicted good ideas. He realized, oh my gosh, the American Medical Association meeting is coming up, and I've never missed one since I became a surgeon. And it's in a mecca of sobriety, Atlantic City. I have an idea. I'll buy a train ticket. I'll go take the train to Atlantic City. I'll attend the conference. I'll prove that I can stay sober, and I will come back. Yee-hee, victorious. Well, Bill said, "Well, if you got to go, you got to go. You know, I'm not the sobriety police." And so they took Bob to the train station. Bob got on the train, headed to Atlantic City, promised his wife, Ann, that he would call her upon arrival. That night, guess what? No call from Dr. Bob. Next morning, no call from Dr. Bob. Ann called the hotel that he was supposed to have checked into. Come to find out, nobody by the name of Robert Smith had checked in to the hotel. That night, no call from Dr. Bob. The next day, however, he was discovered walking around in a blackout at the train station in Akron, and somebody that knew him spotted him, gathered him up, and took him home. And it was actually his secretary, and she took him to her home, called Ann and Bill, and they went over to collect him. Bill mixed up one of his favorite Get Sober cocktails, tomato juice, sauerkraut, and honey. If the disease won't kill you, the cure probably would. Gathered him up, took him home, trying desperately to get him sober because he had surgery to perform the next morning. Woe be to the patient because Bob was a proctologist. Oh, you can't make this up. So they sober Bob up as best they can, but the next morning for a time for his surgery, Bob had the shakes so bad that he couldn't hold, you know, a fork, much less a scalpel. And so Bill went out and got Bob a beer. Gave him a beer for breakfast. And if you've ever seen that work on somebody in his cups, it is absolutely astonishing. His hand smoothed out. He was able to drive himself to the hospital, performed the surgery very delicately. And everybody thought that they would be hearing from Bob by lunchtime. Surgery was scheduled in the morning. Surely we'll hear from him at lunch. At lunchtime, no word from Dr. Bob. Evening rolled around. Dr. Bob doesn't show up for supper. Do you know what happened to Dr. Bob? Turn to page 156. Turn to page 156. It's the first full paragraph on page 156.
One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his trouble had been. He found himself surprisingly well received and learned that many knew of his drinking. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people he had hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of business. At midnight, he came home exhausted, but very happy. He has not had a drink since.
As a matter of fact, Bob never drank again, and his life got immensely better. And in the process, he ended up taking 5,000 men and women through the steps and created a movement that we still celebrate in all sorts of forms and fashions today. So how long did it take Bob to do his ninth step amends? In a day. He did it in a day. It can be done. It can be done. And I wish you Godspeed as we go about to do our amends. All right. Any questions? Comments? Observations? Pithy remarks? Okay. So let's go to step 10. Turn back to page 84. And let's look at step 10. Step 10 is where we're going to continue to take personal inventory, continue to write any new mistakes as they come along. And it starts in the, it's the second full paragraph. It's right in the middle of the page where it says, this thought brings us to?
This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take a personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have encountered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime.
All right, pause right there and hold that spot. This next half a paragraph probably has more content in it than any other short place in the big book. It tells us exactly how to do a step 10 in four parts. And then at the end, it tells us what code we're going to live by. So see, follow along and see if you can catch all four parts. First of all, what are we going to do, Tal?
Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
What does that sound like to y'all? Where does that come from? Step four. Those come right out of the step four inventory list of character defects.
When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them.
All right. It doesn't say if. It says when. Oh, they're going to crop up. You know, but now we're going to know what to do about it. So when these things crop up, the first, number one, we ask God at once to remove it. So anytime the big book says the word ask, what does it mean?
Pray.
So step one, we pray. Two,
we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone.
All right. So the second part is we discuss them with someone immediately. In the world of 12 steps, we call that share. So number one, we pray. Number two, we share with someone immediately about what's going on with us, what we're going through. And then, and if there's an amends to be made, we make it how? Quickly. Quickly as we can. Then what happens, Tal?
Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help.
Right. So next you turn your thoughts. You notice that it doesn't say we rush out and help somebody. It just says we turn our thoughts to somebody. We think of the newcomer. We think of how we could help somebody. We change our thinking. We stop thinking about ourselves and start thinking about others that we could help. And then the very last, that's the fourth part of how to do a tenth step. And then the very last thing is, what's our code?
Love and tolerance of others is our code.
And that's our code as we move through. Now, the next part is called the 10th step promises. Now me, I love me some 9 step promises, but I don't think this is an amazing bunch too. I think too many times we read so much the 9th step promises that we forget about the amazing 10th step promises. And Tal is going to lead us through the 10th step promises.
And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol or addiction. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor or old behaviors. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor or addiction has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
And how do we keep in fit spiritual condition? Well, we continue to do a tenth step every day. We continue to look at our motives and our behaviors. We continue to look at the character defects. And I tell you one thing that the tenth step does for me. The water gets hotter quicker. Right? The water, before doing the steps, the water had to be boiling before I even knew that there was any problem. You know, I'm almost cooked, and I'm thinking, I sense maybe we have an issue here. Now, with the 10th step, I'm very much sensitive to the very subtle changes in my life. And, you know, the way I know that something is not aligned is I start feeling disturbed, right? Something's just kind of bothering me. My serenity, something's off in my serenity. And when I feel that, it's time to do an inventory, whether I do it formally in writing or just think in terms of what's going on. Many times by sharing it at meeting level or sharing with somebody, when I'm a sponsee or a sponsor or one of the people in the program that love me, the truth is then revealed to me and I realize, oh, this is what I'm dealing with. I didn't even see it. And then it gives me an opportunity to set right the wrong. Maybe it's to go make an apology. Maybe it's to go do something I've been putting off that I hadn't wanted to do that's causing me some pain or suffering. Whatever it is, I take action, and by taking some kind of action, and I'd love to be able to tell you that I do this immediately and I'm prompt. Oh, no, no. I have to sit with it a while sometimes, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I sometimes do it in great order. Sometimes I have to suffer a bit with it. Sometimes my wife Beth has to say, are you okay? And I'll go, yeah, I'm fine. And then I go, well, not really. You know, it's just okay. We do it the best we can. No one of us does this perfect, right? And so we just do the best we can. But if we'll follow this practice, our lives do change and things get better and better. And we gain experience on how to deal with the issues that are troubling us. Well, that brings us straight away to step 11, which is going to suggest prayer and meditation. From page 85, if you'll look two lines from the bottom, Tal's going to kick us off.
Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions.
Now, you pause right there just for a second. I mean, you talk about doing some valuable suggestions. The big book is authors are going to tell us what to do at night, during the day, and in the morning. That pretty much covers my experience. You know? So you think you're going to make some definite and valuable suggestions. Oh my gosh, these guys cover everything. Tal, what do we do first?
When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid?
What's that sound like? Step four again. That's the only thing in the big book that is repeated word for word three times. It appears three. It's the only thing. Three times in the big book, it uses that same list of character defects. So I make up. So do you think we're people that have a problem with resentments? You think we have a problem with selfishness? You think maybe we got some honesty issues? Or maybe fear. Could fear be a problem? I think so. Tal?
Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving to all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life?
Then it's going to talk about what we're going to do in the morning. Look at the next paragraph.
On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives.
And then in the next paragraph, it's going to discuss about thinking about the day.
In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not possible that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only.
And then jump down to the very last paragraph, three lines from the bottom. It's going to talk about what we're going to do during the day.
As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does.
All right. It works. It really does. Now, here's what I'd like to do. We gave you some tablets, some of these little spiral notebooks here. So if y'all were willing, do y'all want to do an 11-step guidance right now? You want to practice an 11-step? There's a tradition in NAA, and I'll tell you, my friend Wally that wrote the book Back to Basics, you know, I mentioned to you that he's Dr. Bob's archivist, and it was several years ago that he got a call from Dr. Bob's daughter, Sue, and she told Wally that nobody had been up in the attic in Ardmore Street ever since the 1950s. And she said she believed there must be some kind of AA memorabilia up there that she didn't want to see on eBay. Right? And so she asked Wally if he would come and bring things down of significance of our recovery history, and if he would archive it, and then they could see what they had and then go from there. Well, Wally describes the story of flying into Akron and Sue picking him up at the airport. And it was becoming later in the day, and they drove over to Dr. Bob's old house. And so they went into the house and pulled down the attic steps. And Wally talks about, you know, walking up and going up into the attic, and it being just like you might imagine, just an attic that had been undisturbed for several decades. And so he, in order to step in, he needed to move a few boxes around, and he said that he stirred up, obviously, some dust, and about that time, he said, the sun started setting, and the sunlight was coming in through the slats, through the side of the vents in the house, and he said that the dust that got stirred up was sparkling in that light like 1,000 stars were shining up in the attic, illuminated by those angled rays of light. And Wally said he looked down and he opened up the first box, and inside of it, what he found, the box was full of little spiral notebooks, just like this, that fit into your pocket. And he said when he realized, he looked at them, and so he thought he'd really found something. The next day, he started bringing down boxes and boxes. And turns out that in the morning, they knew from the archives that at Dr. Bob's house, that Bill and Ann and Bob would sit around the kitchen table each morning and ask for guidance. They would write down their guidance and then share the guidance that they received. What nobody knew was that Dr. Bob and Ann had saved all of their guidance notebooks, had continued to practice guidance for the rest of their lives, and when all of the notebooks were brought down and curated, there were 1,100 spiral notebooks just like this, filled with guidance that they had written down. And so, in the tradition of the guidance that they did back in the days of AA, I offer that we can do it the same way because Wally developed and found out what the format was that they used. So if you got something to write on, the first thing that they did that I would offer up that we do is to just sit and get really comfortable. Sit and get comfortable. And then take a couple of falling out breaths, all right? So just take a, the way they did this was take a breath in, say on the count of four, and then let the breath out on a count of eight. So breathe in, count of one, two, three, four, and then let it go. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And then at your own pace, take a breath in to the count of four and let it go at the count of eight. The next part of the process is they talked about opening up the channels of divine guidance, something from the Oxford group that all of them were members of. And so the first channel of divine guidance is the channel of sight. How many of us have you been driving along and you come around a corner or you step out and you see something beautiful that just takes your breath away? Well, that's one of the ways God speaks to us. And so I would offer, just look around and just see what you see and just open up the channel of divine sight. Just take a look around. The second channel of divine guidance is the channel of sound. So God speaks to us through the things we hear. So just pause for a moment and just listen. What do you hear? There's a spiritual buzz in the room. And then the next third channel of divine guidance is the channel of feelings. And so I would offer up to you, how are you feeling? Take a moment just to assess. What are you feeling right now? What are you feeling? The last channel of divine guidance is the channel of knowing. And so these are our thoughts. So obviously, God speaks to us through the thoughts that we have. Of course, not every thought comes from God. But the thoughts that we do have are ways that God speaks to us. So with your notebook, what I would offer, we're going to do 5 minutes of silence. I would ask you to just jot down whatever thoughts come to you with no judgment. There's no good thoughts, no bad thoughts. Just whatever pops into your head, just jot it down. And after a period of doing that, I'll mind the time. And so just jot down whatever thoughts come to you for the next 5 minutes or so. Any extra time. I don't want to interrupt anybody's thought. If you need some extra time, raise your hand. Does anybody need any extra time? Raise your hand. Of doing guidance is that once we've made some notes about the thoughts that we come up, now we share our thoughts. Okay? So, who would like to share some of the things that came up to you? And you do this without explaining, without any commentary. You just read what you've written. Would anybody like to read? Yes. Talk up real loud so everybody can hear you.
Hi, my name's Joe. I'm a sex addict.
Hey, Joe.
I observed God's great work in nature and in man. The people in this room are real, and I feel grateful to be in their presence. My character slash self is at peace and overcome with enlightenment, and I feel God's presence in this room.
Thank you, Joe. Who's next? Yes.
I drew a picture of a rock, a tree, a stream, a mountain, and these ceiling joists.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's good. I didn't point that out, but a lot of times the messages that we get come in the form of pictures, and we see images. And when the last time I did this with Wally, I was with Wally last week, and one of the guidance that came up was just that. And he asked, was it a picture that you saw or were words that you saw? And so in this case, pictures is beautiful. Who else would like to share? Yes.
Meditation, serenity, peace, focus, concentration, respiration.
Thank you. Who else? Yes.
Burned out ball, cool breeze.
Got it. Thank you.
I'm Phil. I'm full of gratitude. I'm grateful for all who have come into my life, good and bad. I want people to benefit from my presence in their lives. Friendship is a wonderful thing. Even when I feel bad or uneasy, I can feel good. Right now, at this moment, I'm at peace. I can become the best version of myself I can be. I will keep an open mind as I examine myself.
That's powerful. Thank you. Yes. Great. That's great. Thank you. Who's next? Yes.
I probably should stop taking Vyvanse since I only wanted to get high. Alan, Jared, Facebook. What the fuck was that noise? This is an interesting writing exercise. My handwriting is awful. I wanted to talk to Walter, smoking. What is that noise? These are random thoughts. How does this prove to be useful? Is Robert looking at what I'm writing? Now I'm afraid of what he might read this. What if I have to read out loud?
I tell you what's interesting about that, if you don't mind, is a lot of the times when I'm doing guidance, I get a person's name. And generally, that's for me to contact them. That's somebody I need to call, somebody I need to contact. I get a lot of those. Names pop up. I had the other day, Wally's name came up. I called him to check on him, see how he was doing. You never know. You never know what that means. And we never know if we're following in guidance until we act on the things, these promptings that we get. After we do our guidance, we share our guidance with somebody else. My sponsor practices it, I practice it, and then I'm able to contact people and say, you know, you came up in my morning guidance this morning. And I just thought I'd give you a call, check on you, see how you were doing. Simple as that. Yeah, it's amazing. Yes, sir.
Surrender as acceptance and seek these things.
That's great. That's great. Who's next? Anybody else want to share? Yes.
There may also be a channel of divine interruption, such as when something drops on the roof. Getting comfortable is a work. People are also God's divine channels. And I need to humble myself before everyone, including my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Anybody else? Well, the truth is, Whether you shared guidance or whether you listened to guidance, you just took the 11th step. Congratulations. Give yourself a big hand. That is a powerful piece of business. All right, so what about the 12th step? And that would be chapter 7 in its entirety is devoted to working the 12th step. And it starts with just a summation of the thing. It's on page 89, starting with the very first line.
Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics or addicts. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics or addicts. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Yeah. Remember, they are very ill.
And it continues on into the next paragraph.
Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot in our lives.
I would offer you up, one way to do this is to continue to do this workshop. Anybody that goes through this workshop is now equipped to take this. There's nothing special about doing this. All the passages in the big book are in that yellow book that I showed you, Back to Basics by Wally P. And you just go through. In addition, we typed up all the big book passages in here, and I only had a few to bring, but I'm going to give you my business card. And anybody that just drop me an email and say you'd like to have the passages from the workshop that we did, I'll attach it to your email and send it back to you. And I've got my cards up here and I'll share it with you. So this is a wonderful way to carry the message to continue to do this. But also, it's even simpler than that. Just by offering up love and concern and guidance to the people, every one of us in this room knows what it's like to be a newcomer. Every one of us knows how we felt when we went to our first meeting and how awkward it was and, just kind of not knowing what the heck those crazy people are talking about and just trying to make heads or tails of this thing. So just offering encouragement and support to the people that are coming into the rooms is a wonderful thing. And just by offering them some love and some assistance, being available yourself to them, giving of your time to sit with them, is a powerful piece of business. And then it's going to talk about, in the big book on page 100, in the first full paragraph, it's going to talk about how when you're working with somebody, it's we both need to be walking in this path of spiritual progress.
Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
On page 102, we get a whole new job description. Page 102, the second full paragraph, it's down to the bottom of the page, and this is our new job description.
Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed.
And then on page 164, in the second full paragraph starting toward the end, it summarizes the entire process that we've been through. It's page 164. It starts off with what I believe to be this wonderful statement of humility. Here these guys have outlined this whole program, and yet they make this beautiful, wonderful, humble statement.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge with the happy road of destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
There's one more thing in the big book that I wanted to share with you. There's a place, you know, when I was first coming in, my sponsor bought me my first big book and gave it to me and suggested that I read it through, and I didn't understand it. I started reading through that thing. On page 25, I'm reading that we're being rocketed into the fourth dimension. And I told my sponsor, I said, listen, these people are high. I know how to get rocketed into the fourth dimension, please, you know. But after you've gone through this workshop today, and after we've had a chance to really examine and yet even take many of the steps here today, I think that what they're talking about will finally make sense. Turn back with me to page 25. Go all the way to the front. It didn't make sense then, but it sure makes sense now. Page 25, the first full paragraph, beginning right after it says, there is a solution. As Tal reads this to us, see if you can pick out each one of the 12 steps in all of the remaining couple of paragraphs.
There is a solution. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves.
I want to welcome you all to the fourth dimension of existence. I want to tell you what an honor it has been to be with you today and to get a chance to do this workshop. It's a great privilege for me to be here and share this with you. I love every one of you. I thank you so much for how hard you've worked today. You guys have been a delight to be with, and I wish you just a wonderful remainder of your weekend, and I hope you have a great bonfire tonight, some wonderful sharing, and I hope to see you guys as we all trudge the road to happy destiny. So I'll see you sometime down the path. God bless you all.